Hey everyone, welcome to the New Insight Podcast, where we interview the most important movers and shakers in ophthalmology and give you new insights on the innovations ahead. I'm your host, Viral Shuth. My guest today is John Sheets, CEO of Pantheon Vision, a startup company that is working on corneal transplant alternatives with bioengineered solutions. In our conversation, we discuss John's background, including his past work both in the ophthalmology industry plus time at the FDA working on medical device approvals. We talk about how this experience has put him in the perfect position to lead a company that is looking to help address corneal blindness at the global level. I'm thrilled to be able to give our listeners some new insights from a big thinking innovator in our field. So without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with John Sheets. So John, thanks for joining us. I've been excited to kind of have you on the show after hearing about what you guys have been working on. You know, you're our first non-retina guest, which is in itself pretty exciting. As a retina specialist, we always kind of gravitate towards, new things that are happening in the retina community. In my training, I thought for sure I was going to be a cornea specialist, because that one of my first mentors in ophthalmology was a cornea specialist, and I found it fascinating, and then ultimately kind of gravitated towards retina. But I always found it fascinating kind of what we could accomplish with the cornea, with transplants, and then seeing some of the progress that was being made, going from full thickness transplantation to partial thickness transplantation. But, you know, the reality is, short of that, there haven't been a lot of breakthroughs, and we know that there's still a lot of room for improvement. So I'm looking forward to hearing kind of how you're looking to create a solution for that, and how that journey has kind of, where that journey has taken you. So first, welcome. Before we get into what you're working on, first, I want to welcome you and just kind of give you a chance to let our listeners know who you are and kind of what your background is. You know, I know a lot of your background, but it's great for the listeners to get an understanding of that, because I think it really will help color how you've gotten to where you are and what you're working on and how you're approaching it.
Sure. Well, glad to do so. And thank you so much for having me on today. I like to describe myself right now in terms of my career. I say I'm in the fourth quarter of my career, but I'm still trying to put points on the board. And I do like to think of myself as a lifelong learner and a student of innovation. And that's what we're doing a lot now, and we can talk about that. But, you know, I started off undergraduate thinking that I was going to become a dentist like my father, and ended up in material science and engineering, working in biomaterials. And it's been an exciting career. I was fortunate enough during my graduate training to get involved in ophthalmology, and my dissertation was actually on surface modification of intraocular lens materials. So at the University of Florida, where I did my training, I got to interact with the world-class ophthalmic department at the University of Florida, but also developed a lot of interesting insights in how to do product development for commercialization. My chairman had worked at Xerox during his career, so I really got a head start on what ended up being my career in the product development and the medical device and pharmaceutical industries. And as I said, I like to be a student of how the processes work and what we need to do. And so getting in close with our customers, whether or not they be an anterior segment or vit-ret surgeon, it's always critical to hear what customers want to say about their products. But one of my mentors taught me many years ago, saying customers can tell you what they want, they cannot tell you what they need. That only comes from observation. And that meant doing the work to get into the OR, to stay in intimate with the practices and do those kind of things. And as I did that throughout my career, I didn't recognize that was developing as a discipline of innovation called design thinking. And one of the great examples of that is out in Silicon Valley, the IDEO company, a design company that we affiliate with Apple, they really perfected this whole concept of design thinking. And back when I was still at Alcon Laboratories, they created the Stanford Biodesign Program, which was taking the learnings of IDEO on how to do design thinking and applying it in the medical field. So it was a collaboration between the Stanford School of Engineering and the College of Medicine to do that. And they've been incredibly productive. So I recently had a call with my good friend, Josh Macauer, who's the director of that center. They've done outstanding work. But it just goes back that in my career history, you know, in mentioning your experience as a vet surgeon, is watching the great competition that happened during the 80s and 90s between Steve Charles working with Alcon and Gene DeWan working with Bausch and Lomb, each of them amazingly insightful innovators, incredible surgeons with also just unbelievable energy. The advances that happened in the procedure. Now there's, you know, we know that the entire field has been very rich with other innovators that do that, but having watched that firsthand, it was really rewarding and see, you know, how having good competitors makes you sharper and it drives you to get better products out. But both of those gentlemen were able to step back and see where the opportunity was to improve their procedures and do that. The same thing was going on with intraocular lens surgery and cataract surgery, which was a lot of my career, and seeing the surgeons do that and the innovations that happened with Dr. Kelman and phaco emulsification and then small incisional lens surgery, you know, those really were key. But that proximity of really staying intimate with the customer is so critical in any real meaningful medical innovation. So that, and again, that's the principle is called design thinking, and the BioDesign program does it extremely well.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I mean, I think you're right. You know, if our listeners haven't looked into IDEO, I think looking into that company is a great idea, because I think you're right. It you know, looking at design more holistically and thinking about, I think what you said was, what does a customer need, not what they want, I think is a really nice way to look at it. And you mentioned a couple of personalities with Eugene DeWan and Steve Charles, and it takes personalities like that, not just personalities. You have to be a little manic, I think. You have to be driven, and you have to kind of see the connections that a lot of people don't see. And I think you're right. I think that was a great example of what really, I think they drove each other to kind of create and improve our field. And we're without a doubt using those gifts and understandings that they've kind of, you know, taught us as foundational at this point for what we do day to day, which is amazing to see. And you're right. Same in the anterior segment side of it as well. And so look, you're coming at it from a clinician's angle, but you also have kind of history, I think, with the FDA. And so all of these facets, I think, have helped you kind of come to this point. So tell us a little bit about your experience with the FDA and potentially how that has helped you. Because a lot of the listeners here are people that work in the industry that are looking to develop, you know, new treatments, new products, new surgeries. And I think that understanding will help some of them understand kind of how to get to where they want to go.
Well, you know, one of the things that we've always said is that our products are developed and designed to serve five customer groups: the patient, the provider, the regulator, the payer, and the facility they're used in. All of those five stakeholders are customers for what your outputs are going to be. And so I was fortunate enough in my early years to being the chairman of a couple of ISO subcommittees developing standards for intraocular lenses. Essential team members of that were always staff from the FDA, very dedicated people wanting to do the right thing, wanting to have new and innovative products that serve the American public. And so I got developed personal relationship with them. So later in my career, when I had the opportunity to go and work at the FDA, I said, this is just coming full circle. So that rather than being a sponsor or a collaborator, now I'm going to be on the FDA side of things. Now, I was not a reg affairs professional. There are people with, you know, deep skills in that space that far surpass my capabilities in there, but I do know process development. And so my goal was to come in and implement statistical process control on how we were doing reviews to both make them faster and more productive and improve the quality of them. So I did some work to do that, and it had some benefits during the time I was at the agency, but I got a tremendous appreciation for what those people, their dedication to their jobs are, and so on. You know, there's a tendency for some people to say, well, it's the federal government. They're all just not working very hard and sitting back. I can't say there aren't people like that. I ran into at least one of them during my time, but by and large, that's not a good characterization of the kind of quality of people that are there. And of course, most recently, the two gentlemen that were my bosses at FDA, Bill Maisel and Jeff Schoen, have retired. I think that leaves a big leadership void for the Center for Devices and Radiological Health. Again, like anybody else, they're fallible humans, but they did a lot to make things better and make things better for both the industry and the public. And it was one of those places where you could never satisfy everybody, but if you had each side equally unhappy, you probably were doing a pretty good job. I do want to mention a quick recommendation, and that is, if somebody wants to learn about design thinking and IDEO, there's a wonderful video on YouTube. If you type in David Kelly 60 Minutes, Kelly was the gentleman that founded IDEO and led it and then created the design school at Stanford. It's a nice, not too long vignette about what design thinking is and how it works, and shows the examples of how it's used at both IDEO and biodesign. So I recommend that to folks.
Yeah, great. And we'll find that link and put that in our show notes as well. So that's great. I love that recommendation. So let's talk about Pantheon Vision now, you know, and what you're working on currently. And I think before you get into what you're working on, you know, what is the problem that you're solving for, right? Why is there a gap in this industry, and where are you looking to kind of bridge that gap?
Well, it was right in front of my face all these years. When I started in graduate school with Herb Kaufman and Frank Pollock and some of the other ophthalmologists at the University of Florida, they were working on corneal implants and had some different designs. And I was working with them on materials that would be compatible in the cornea. And we did some very interesting work back then. Well, I kind of got off into the cataract surgery, IOL, refractive vitret stuff, and didn't think much about it until I was approached and said, hey, we've got a cool technology that we want to make into a synthetic corneal replacement. Would you be willing to put together a business plan for this and then lead the effort to do that? And I said, absolutely, it sounds exciting. And so this was sponsored by our current investor, an organization called CareLink International, that used to be an iBank. It was one of the largest iBanks in the U.S., sold that business, raised funds, and now they're dedicated to supporting efforts to cure corneal blindness on a global basis. Because we have issues here in the U.S., but we do have, you know, actually a surplus of corneas for repairing damaged corneas. Many parts of the world, those aren't available at all. So the goal is, let's get a product that will be useful in these low and middle income countries that don't have any opportunity to do that. Now, one of the other work experiences I had is I worked within the Agrawal Eye Hospital system in Chennai, India. I signed up for a 2-year stint, got chased home by COVID after about a year and a half. What a life experience. And working within that great facility, it's the largest chain of eye hospitals in India. But again, being in surgery on a multiple times a week to see what the needs were in that setting and within that whole ecosystem really opened my eyes to a lot. I'm very proud of the fact that we created a company called Elazar that was one of the first innovators to create a totally portable perimetry system. The whole thing can fit in a backpack. It looks like a VR headset controlled by a little tablet. We launched the product, and it was a product designed and built to be affordable and accessible for the Indian market and the other LMIC countries. And it's been pretty successful in doing that. But that whole idea of mobile diagnostics, that's just taken off in ophthalmology. And I see a bright future as we continue to make ourselves more affordable, more accessible to patients. But that experience then led me to this one with the corneal product. So I put together a business plan to do what they initially asked me to do. It turned out the technology wasn't going to be available. So we took a step back, did a big relook at what cataract or what corneal surgery is all about today. And I was just like dumbfounded. I had not looked at what real needs existed in corneal repair. You know, the fact is that a corneal graft, 10% of them fail in the first year, 50% fail by 5 years. And then from somebody that's been working and trying to get 20/20 vision or 20 and 20 distance and near vision for the last 20 years, I was stunned to find out that over half the patients that have successful corneal surgery are less than 20/70. So there's a big need here. And so that's the foundation of our company, is to have something that's going to be globally available, something that's going to provide exceptional visual results, and then also to have a procedure that's much easier to do. Because taking a product into these low and middle income countries, it's not just having the product available. We're going to have to train surgeons on how to do that. And there aren't trained corneal surgeons there. So we have to start with a different skill set and give them something that's useful to do. And again, this comes where I think I really benefited from the fact, after 20 years in ophthalmology, I stepped away from my role of heading surgical R&D at Alcon, and I became the worldwide head of R&D at Ethicon, the largest J&J medical device company. In that organization, we had a suture business that's, you know, $4 billion in size. We had a women's health business. We had a wound closure business. We even had a cardiac surgery business. So I was experienced and got in close to all of those and saw so many amazing technologies, and also understood the needs in those other therapeutic areas, that once I went back to ophthalmology, it was really a great new set of tools to bring into the game. And I believe in my career, I benefited from by stepping away from ophthalmology and then going back into it and seeing new things. So in fact, I went from Ethicon to then being the president of Hoya. Then I went to Bausch & Lomb as head of R&D, and I did that for a number of years. Left ophthalmology again, where I was in the head of corporate research for Boston Scientific, where I was covered all of the different business units that Boston Scientific had, and then came back to ophthalmology again. So all of that really gives me a different facet viewpoints. And I then think, well, besides perhaps being a little bit more schizophrenic after all of that, I also have that ability to kind of triangulate and see things from different angles, which I think is useful both as a life skill, but also certainly as a product innovator.
Yeah, John, I think you're right. When we see, you know, who has, you know, become successful in this field, and who's able to take, you know, a great idea or a great product and eventually, you know, get it through the process, the long, arduous process, and eventually commercialize it, I think it's people that have kind of two or more areas of expertise, right? The people that get out of their silo, that, you know, get out of their comfort zone, learn kind of about things that just weren't taught to them, you know, through potentially like a medical career where we're going through, medical school and residency, and really not getting outside of that comfort zone. But I think you're right. The people that I've seen that have been most successful at, like I said, just essentially commercializing these ideas, are the people that have actually been able to then step outside, experience it, and sometimes fail in those experiences, right? Because I think a lot of that learning comes from the failure itself. And then eventually taking those lessons and then taking whatever it is to a place that they wouldn't have otherwise gotten it to. So I think you're exactly right. And I think that background that you have really kind of serves you well in all the things you've done and now what you're working on now. So how much are you able to tell us about the actual kind of bioengineered solution that you are working on, whether it's the product itself, whether it's the procedure, whether it's, you know, how it's different than using a cadaver cornea, for example, or you know, layers of the cornea? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I'm happy to do so. And, I'm excited in that I have a lot I can tell you, but as we file patents, I'll have more and more information to be able to disclose about it. I was talking to a friend earlier today who had reviewed our pitch deck, and he said, "John, there's a word missing in your presentation." And I said, "What's the word?" I'm thinking I made a typo or grammatical error. He goes, "This is transformational." And I sat back and I said, "You're right." And again, it comes a lot from my Alcon experience, where Alcon, you know, always was going to have a complete bundled procedure that would, all the parts of it would work together. So I was developing implants and drugs for cataract surgery. I had close collaboration with the people doing the phaco equipment development and the handheld instrument development and all of those things. So they all fit together. And when you have that, you have a procedure that makes it so much more accessible for the surgeon to use. But then it also takes care of all of the issues that the patients may expect. So that's what we've done at this company we formed called Pantheon Vision. It's called Pantheon because we think of the dome of the cornea in the Pantheon in Rome, not necessarily very available to or accessible when you look on the outside of the building, but once you enter the Pantheon and you look up in this magnificent, elegant, ornate dome, you go, yeah, that looks just like the cornea. And then, of course, in the center of it, they have an opening called the oculus that illuminates the entire interior. Well, that's what our goal is, to have something that is elegant. A solution is that. Doesn't have to be complex. We're shooting for simplicity. So I had the privilege of working with a very innovative friend of mine named Len Pinchuk down in Miami. He's done a lot of great work with Baskin Palmer. He developed and commercialized a glaucoma implant out of a family of materials he developed. We're utilizing that material for our product. We're partnered with a company that has developed an IOL out of that product. They give us great capabilities because they have a validated certified procedure for making these products. So we've got a great implant design that's going to be easy to implant. And then we're also developing some ancillary products that go with it. This is the area I have to be a little sketchy about, because the provisional patents are still in process, but it's really going to give us a much easier procedure to do. If we look at corneal transplants today, not only do we have an issue about the availability of tissue on a global basis, but the procedure is very lengthy. Corneal surgeons are elegant in being able to do suturing of those tissues to have apposition of them and not create astigmatism in the cornea, which, after all, it provides the bulk of the optical power of the eye. Well, we have a solution that's not going to require a lot of time. On Monday of this week, I did some animal surgeries, or I participated in animal procedures with an organization that's working with us. And in the second eye, the surgeon did, he was able to get our implant having from start to finish in 15 minutes. So it's composed to an hour for tissue transplants. That's a magnificent achievement in making it go forward. So we believe that will be translatable into human surgeries as well. But the key is, it's not the time, it's the ease of the surgery that then will manifest itself in better clinical results, better stability of the product. And then we have exquisite optics in this. Our optical designer is someone I worked with at Alcon, has a background in designing contact lenses as well as IOLs. We're going to have the best optics in the industry without doubt. And what that translates into is a much better product for the patient and a procedure that the surgeons will be able to feel very good about the results they get.
That's fantastic. You know, as we kind of, you know, near the end of our conversation, I want to touch on one last thing. You mentioned some challenges or some hurdles and how you've kind of overcome them. You know, just look, we don't have a lot of tissue available globally. Let's come up with a bioengineered solution. The surgical technique is difficult. If you're looking at standard kind of traditional PKPs, let's figure out an easier way so we can train and we can scale, right? So that's another thing. But now we're talking about something that's global. And I know working with companies that are looking at solutions outside of the US, oftentimes, you know, it's hard to fund those types of projects and in investments, because, you know, you want to be able to provide for the masses. And then there's always, you know, this question of return. And so how have you run into challenges with that? And how have you kind of addressed those or overcome those challenges?
Well, we're still facing into that challenge because we can't let it just be a charity project. But one of the things that was revealed to us is these clinical outcomes that we're paying for in the US, it still creates a big opportunity here. The good news is our product already has existing reimbursement codes that are very favorable, and we want to do that. We also know that there hasn't been a lot of innovation in this space. Now, I'm aware of a number of competitors, and I'm actually presenting at the Ophthalmic Futures Forum in Barcelona soon. There are people pursuing other options here, but we believe that keeping it simple and having a product that's going to be easier to implant and very accessible is key to a global success. You know, it comes down to defining the challenges you want to take on and not trying to overstretch them. You know, at one point in my career, I was running R&D at a biotech firm, and we wanted to get into stem cells. Or even at Ethicon, we were developing stem cell products. Exciting science, really great technology. But the reality is, those take a long time. And in many cases, we've outstripped the science, the biological science of what we know to be practical, develop a product and get regulatory approvals for it. Our approach with going after a medical device with a proven biomaterial that has, known ophthalmic biocompatibility, we're lowering the bar for ourselves. We're reducing the risk. And that's what you got to do and not try to overstep it. And sometimes organizations, I think, try to take on too big of a challenge and then they fall short. And of course, that's not good for them and it's not good for their shareholders either. You know, when we were talking earlier about going after the customer need, you know, there's the classic video of when Steve Jobs revealed the iPhone and he talked about what we have here. And I've got my iPhone. What we got here is a mobile phone. And it's a music and video and photo storage device. And it's an internet access device. And of course, he says they're all four. They're doing these things. And then he says it's all in one. And we call it the iPhone. That came from a profound understanding of customer needs. There were not competitive products available then. But they studied what the needs were. And they invented a solution to those needs. I think it's one of the great examples of all time of design thinking. And that's what we have to stay true to and keep thinking about those five customer groups, the five stakeholders for the products, and keep it going. And I think this is an opportunity for your listeners that are clinicians to be able to step away. And also, as you said earlier, you know, maybe the insights from to make the next improvement in vitreoretinal surgery isn't going to come from a vitreoretinal surgeon. Maybe it's going to come from a neurosurgeon and things like that. And you see the transfer of technologies. You know, it's only been in the last number of years where we're finally using other than light microscopy to image in the eye. You know, I these animal surgeries we did on Monday, after the eyes were completed, we did OCT on them. Unbelievable. I'm old enough to know when there were only three OCT instruments in the world. And yeah. Now, they're available at animal clinic facilities. Spectacular.
Yeah. And so, and we're putting them in people's homes too now. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what a great advance. And you know, enabling people. And now with the amazing power of the internet and AI, the ability to get rapid diagnostics. I mean, between my time here at Pantheon Vision and the time I was in India, I formed a company called EyeSight Mobile, where the output of that was going to be an entire ophthalmic lane that would fit in a backpack, where you'd go anywhere you needed to go to do complete vision care. That's not only, it is happening right now as we speak, and it's going to become so much more affordable. You know, just a philosophical comment, you know, there's so many people, we can find a lot of faults for what's going on in the world, but I'm so optimistic about all the advances because of people that care about what is other people, and then they do things to make a positive impact. These kind of things are going to happen. And there are innovators around the world that are doing that day in, day out. The mobile phone, the smartphone is going to be an integral part of that. But there are other technologies that we can't foresee that are also going to play an influence. And I think eye care is in the right place. I think Pantheon Vision, the product we're going to have, it will be transformable in taking care of people that have corneal blindness.
No, John, I agree. I mean, first I want to thank you for coming on the show. You know, when I heard, you know, about what you were doing and your story, and how you approach these problems, I said, we got to get you on the show because I need people to hear about that. Because I think, you know, you're approaching it in what I would call probably holistic way of looking at this. You're looking at kind of what people need, you know, what the challenges are. You're anticipating hurdles that I think a lot of people don't. And then look, you're also looking at solving a problem in a global way, right? And I think there's millions, tens of millions of people that have a problem that may benefit from your solution, which is amazing. But then I think when you build a company the way you are, you have the potential of impacting so many more people, right? And I think that's kind of the beauty of what I think you're doing. And again, I'm glad you came on the show. I wanted to give listeners a chance to kind of meet you and understand what you're working on, and then hopefully get a chance to follow progress along the way. So I really appreciate that. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And I would say in terms of my legacy in healthcare, I'm very proud of the things I've accomplished. But the biggest legacy I have is my daughter is a first-year medical student at Emory University. And I'm very proud of that fact. And I know she's going to make a big contribution in her career.
Congratulations. And yes, that is important. We need that next generation to carry the mantle forward. Absolutely.
Thank you for listening in to the New Insight Podcast. We really appreciate your time. Be sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred listening or watching platform. And if you're interested in more ophthalmology news or other podcasts, visit hcplive.com and check out our offerings. For now, I'm Dr. Viral Sheth. Hope to see you next time to discuss what's new in sight.